Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we get a preview of the Swing on This live event, which will take place this Saturday evening at 7 o'clock at the legendary Kane's Ballroom. Host John Woolley will be joined by the Tulsa Playboys, a new generation of Tulsa Western Swing musicians, as well as Cowbop, a California-based Western Swing group led by jazz guitarist Bruce Foreman and the vocalist Pinto Pammy. Singer-songwriter Don White will also be a special guest for the two-hour broadcast and dance, which will also commemorate the 100th anniversary of veteran Tulsa bandleader and Western Swing musician Johnny Lee Wills, who took over his older brother Bob's Tulsa band when Bob left for California back in 1940, continued to play here in Tulsa until his death in 1984. I'm joined today by Swing on This host John Woolley, who's hosted the show on KWGS for the past 9 years. Woolley's had an even longer career researching, writing, and broadcasting this music. It has had such a legacy in our city and state. Swing on This takes place this Saturday at 7 o'clock, and of course, proceeds do benefit Public Radio Tulsa. John Woolley is my guest. John Woolley, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you for having me again.
We have a big weekend ahead of us, both of us, for the Public Radio Tulsa and for your show, Swing on This, as we're doing our second Swing on This live broadcast. And this has been a lot of fun. We had a great amount of fun last year, and this year we've kind of made it even bigger and better, haven't we?
You know, we have. We've got two bands, plus we've got a couple of songs from Don White, who a lot of people around here know, a true Tulsa sound legend. He's even going to be there in between the two bands.
Now, the Kane's Ballroom for years was the host of the, Noontime live broadcast?
Noontime broadcast plus a couple of dances on Thursdays and Saturday nights. They broadcast live from there as well.
And that was on KVOO for many years.
Many, many years. KVOO was AM, yeah.
But about how long ago did the live broadcast stop from the Kane's?
Live broadcast, the regular broadcast stopped sometime in 1958. Brett Bingham and I are working on a book about the Kane's Ballroom. And we've tried to find the exact date that it stopped. We know it's sometime, probably late in 1958.
Uh-huh. And I know when we were talking to the management of the Kane's last year, they were saying this is the first live radio broadcast we've had in years.
In a long time. They would try to do some along the way when they do the Bob Wills weekends in March. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they would do some of those or try some one-off things. But, yes, this is the first time in a long time.
Yeah. So explain what's going to happen this weekend. We have the Tulsa Playboys.
We have the Tulsa Playboys, who have established a Western Swing on a regular basis in Tulsa once again at the Kane's Ballroom. They're playing out there once a month, and they're playing for our event, as well as Cowbop from the West Coast. Now, Cowbop is the Western Swing organization led by the bop guitarist Bruce Foreman and his wife Pinto Pammy as the vocalist.
Now, Bruce Foreman, I remember him from the 1970s. He was making jazz records on Muse.
Oh, yeah. He's
in
an
70s
incredible
and 80s.
Bop guitarist, and still is. Still uh-huh. does jazz, but also his approach is to take that sort of bop approach to Western Swing music, and it's really nice music.
And does it sound like the Western Swing we're used to hearing in Oklahoma, or does it have a bit of a different sound?
No, it sounds like the Western Swing we're used to hearing in Oklahoma that was established by Bob Wills, which is essentially music with a dance beat and sometimes, but not always, countrified lyrics or rural lyrics that allows the players to improvise. I mean, there have been some wonderful improvisational players in the Bob and John Lee Wills bands down through the years, and so he's just really in that tradition.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to hear some music here in just a moment, but Bruce Foreman, he's had a long career. How did he get involved in Western Swing? Has he always been involved in Western Swing?
I don't know if he has or not, but he came to it from jazz rather than from country or anything like that. I remember talking to him, and he admired it for the chance it gave a musician to play, to improvise, and was attracted to it in that way.
It's funny because, you know, when you listen to your show, and occasionally you'll play stuff from the 1940s,
yes,
which sounds like very much like jazz bebop, except it's a little, I don't want to say square, but it's got a different rhythmic sort of pattern to it, but it's lots of notes, lots of fast notes, and maybe several different instruments all playing a unison line very quickly.
That's right.
And it's interesting there's those connections.
Well, I remember Billy Jack Wills, who had a band that was just almost a bop band. They could certainly do bop. It was proto-rockabilly. It was bop. They could do just about anything. And they were at Wills Point up in Sacramento, California, a place that Bob Wills owned in the early 1950s, held it down there. And he told me one time, he said, Bob always said, keep the beat out front. Because if you keep the dance beat out front and people can dance, you can do anything you want to with the instruments. And that's what you're hearing. You're hearing that dance, that swing beat, usually a 2-4 beat, and then all of a sudden, and this goes way back. I mean, you've got some of their fiddlers like Curly Lewis, who is actually going to be with us in the audience at this event, that look to Joe Venuti and people like that as their inspiration.
Mm. Well, before we go any further, let's hear a little music by Cal Bop. And one of the things I was looking at, you know, Cal Bop does... They do Western swing songs, but they do other sort of songs, too, I assume in a Western swing style.
Well, they do, and that's one of the things all the Western swing bands did. Bob, Johnny Lee, everybody took pop tunes of the time and changed them into Western swing songs.
That's right. I remember Bob Wills did the St. Louis Blues at one point.
Oh, he did his St. Louis Blues. He did Tuxedo Junction. He did all of those kinds of big band tunes, yes.
Yeah. So we're going to hear a little music by Cal Bop. This is Bruce Foreman and Cal Bop. And on the record, you know, he's got some of the biggest heavyweights in L.A. as far as like Roger Kellaway and Andy Martin.
Yes.
Some great players on there. But what are we going to hear?
We're going to hear a pop tune. Anytime, done Western swing style.
Anytime you're feeling lonely, anytime you're feeling blue, anytime you feel downhearted, that will prove your love for me is true. Anytime you're thinking about me, that's the time I'll be thinking of you. So anytime you say you want me back again, that's the time I come on home to you.
Music by Cal Bop, one of our guests for the Swing on This live event this Saturday at the Canes. My guest, John Woolley, hosts a Swing on This. Now, there are sort of, we think of Western swing as having three sort of schools. There's the Texas school, where they refer to it as Texas swing.
Right, right.
And then we have Western swing here in Oklahoma, and we have Western swing out in California. This sort of follows that migration in the 1930s, doesn't it?
It does, and it also follows the broadcast pattern that KVOO had. It was one of those old clear channel back in when clear channel meant it was a 25,000-watt flamethrower, and it would just shoot clear out to the West Coast. And kind of that's where Western swing took hold, was Oklahoma and Texas. And by the way, Texas swing and Western swing, the only difference is that Western swing becomes Texas swing when it gets south of the Red River because they tend to co-op everything we do. But keep in mind that Bob Wills was chased out of Texas by a future Texas governor and cultivated Western swing right here in Tulsa.
Well, so the evening is 7 to 9 this Saturday night at the Canes Ballroom. We hope you all come out and support Public Radio Tulsa, but also enjoy a great evening of dancing. We're going to have the dance floor out on the Canes with reserved seating, so you have a place to sit when in between dances. And we had a great time last time, but this time we're doing two bands, again, the Tulsa Playboys and Cal Bop, and then you brought in Don White to do a couple songs. Why did you bring Don White?
Because I have a great deal of respect and admiration for Don White. Don White has a song called No Place Like the Canes. And when the Canes was rebuilt by the Rogers family, and they really did an extensive remodeling, and they reopened it after doing a lot of things to the Canes, Don White was the first person on that stage, and the first song played in the new Canes was No Place Like the Canes. I play it on my show from time to time, and I just thought it would be nice. We're going to have a little bit, and of course, Rich, you're a musician, and you told me that, well, the bands will check in and out off the stage fairly quickly. I know better. So I wanted to have someone up there who could do a song or two while the bands were changing over, and I couldn't think of anybody better than Don. He's a wonderful talent, songwriter, singer with Tulsa music heritage that's second to none.
Now, the other thing that you've really pushed in these 2 years that we've been doing it, first year we thought it was going to be the 100th anniversary of Johnny Lee Wills last year, and it turned out to be 99.
Right. If I could count, I'd have a real job.
This is the 100th anniversary year of Johnny Lee Wills. He actually turned the anniversary was, I guess, last
September the 6th, I believe it is.
Yeah, and this was when this was originally scheduled around that time, but we had to move it due to conflicts at the Guthrie Green. You're a big proponent of Johnny Lee Wills, who doesn't really get the due that Bob Wills gets. And why is that?
Well, he doesn't, because it's like any other younger brother. You know, I mean, look at the Baldwins.
Alec gets all the press.
Exactly.
Well, Alec might have all the talent,
too. There's some lesser Baldwins in there that have pretty good careers. Johnny Lee came with Bob in 1934 from Waco, Texas, at that time, to Tulsa, playing tenor banjo. And when Bob was drafted into the service in 42, Johnny Lee stayed in Tulsa and led the band. So Bob and Johnny Lee were in Tulsa from 34 to 42. Then Bob leaves. His Army career did not work out well for him. And Johnny Lee ran Johnny Lee Wills and his boys.
And he basically stayed out in California and made movies.
He went to California and made movies, but he was pretty peripatetic. He was also in Texas for a while, and he was around, and he didn't want to come back here after his discharge from the Army because Johnny Lee had established his band at the Canes. So Johnny Lee, from 1942 on, and on those daily broadcasts until late 58, he maintained that presence in Tulsa. And Guy Logsdon, who you know, is a wonderful historian, and he's the first person that really made me aware of that Johnny Lee Wills stayed in Tulsa from 34 to 58. He had his Western store here. He had a wonderful Western store.
Yeah, well, he was a presence here for the rest of his life, really.
He was a presence here for the rest of his life. He played here until his death in 84.
Yeah. Well, I think we ought to hear a little music by Johnny Lee Wills. So we've been talking about Johnny Lee Wills and his legacy. And Ragmop, let's hear one of his great hits. Tell us a little bit about this recording, because this is not his original recording.
No, this version comes from a 1979 album called Reunion, which reunited Johnny Lee Wills with a whole bunch of his people, and I think it's one of the greatest Western swing albums ever done, produced by Steve Ripley. You're going to hear O.W. Mayo, who is the announcer for Johnny Lee Wills and the business manager for Johnny Lee and Bob Wills as well.
Johnny Lee, here's a good old number that you get a lot of requests for.
What's that, Mr. Mayo?
Ragmop. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Johnny Lee Wills, the Ragmop Kid.
One, two, three.
That's music by Johnny Lee, his big hit, Ragmop, as we talk with John Woolley about the big swing on this event this Saturday night at 7 o'clock at the Canes Ballroom. And in so many ways, what really cements Tulsa as sort of a capital Western swing is Bob, but it's also Johnny Lee.
It's Bob and Johnny Lee. A lot of people, as some of the old people will tell you, I'll interview people, said, oh yeah, we danced to Bob back there in the late 40s and early. Well, they were dancing to Johnny Lee, but it was a Wills band. And actually, there were four Wills bands at one point out there. Luke Wills' Rhythm Busters, then Billy Jack Wills and his Western Swing Band, Johnny Lee Wills here, Bob was all over the place. So there were four bands, and they would change personnel and everything. But you see, Bob had the hits. Bob had San Antonio Rose, and which was a huge, as you know, a very huge hit in 1940. Johnny Lee had some hits, though. Ragmop was a big hit in 41 for Johnny Lee Wills. He had a big hit with Peter Rabbit, the song Peter Rabbit. So he
now,
was
did
not.
Ragmop end up going into the Bob Wills repertoire as well?
Did
everything cross-pollinate?
Most of the time, but Ragmop was forever. They had a lot of songs they did alike. Yeah. But Ragmop, you see, was picked up by, I believe it was the Ames Brothers in pop, and several other people had hits in the pop, just like San Antonio Rose had been picked up by Bing Crosby. And so Ragmop kind of was to Johnny Lee Wills what San Antonio Rose was to Bob.
All right. So this is the 100th anniversary year of Johnny Lee Wills, and we're celebrating at the Canes with Swing on This Live, which takes place this Saturday at 7. at the Canes Ballroom. Show starts at 7. We'll be on the air live, as well as we hope you'll be there in person. My guest is John Woolley, a host of Swing on This. Now, John, let's talk a little bit about you. You know, you've got a lot of eclectic tastes.
I do.
You're into B movies. You're into horror movies, but you're also very much involved in scholarship on Western swing. How did you first get interested in Western swing music?
Well, you know, I was a band kid growing up at Chelsea. I grew up in Chelsea, and I loved big band music because I was played trombone like you do, not nearly as well. But I played trombone for a time, and I loved listening to big band music and loved listening to Tommy Dorsey and Glenn Miller and kind of got in that way. And then my uncle, he was an oil field worker, and he moved next door. He's a Cherokee, and he had was not only a musician himself, but he had these old 78s of Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. And the first time I heard them, they just happened to be in that San Antonio Rose period when Bob Wills had a big band. You know, he was forever experimenting. He would have small string groups, then he'd have horns. And this was in 41. He had a big band. And I thought, my gosh, I've never heard anything like this. This is like big band music that I love, but it's also got something that really speaks to me about being from a small town in Oklahoma. And those things together, really, I didn't know what this new kind of music was. I had never heard country. My uncle loved country music, but this wasn't country music. This was something completely different. It was rural, but yet it was sophisticated. It had horns, and it had an excitement and a joy to the music that just really brought me up short. So I really became a fan at that time.
So how did you become a fan to becoming sort of more of a specialist or go-to person who knows the history? I mean, you just started devouring the history of Western swing?
Yeah, you know, I'm a writer, and I'm lucky because if I find something I'm interested in, then I try and figure out a way to make a little bit of money out of writing about it because you can take your passion, as you know and what you do, you can take the passion that you have for things and turn them into what you do for a living. And so I started researching Western swing. I found out how fertile northeastern Oklahoma was, found out about the Canes Ballroom and where Bob Wills had basically popularized Western swing. It wasn't born here. It was born in Fort Worth, but it was popularized. I liked it. My little conceit is that it was born in Fort Worth, but it crawled out of its crib in Tulsa at the Canes Ballroom.
And many years writing for the Tulsa World, you probably interviewed every major figure in Western swing.
That was one of the great blessings of being at the Tulsa World because, you know, they would have a Bob, and still do have a Bob Wills weekend in March when Bob was born. And the people would come through, and I was lucky enough to talk to people like Leon McAuliffe. I think the greatest thing I ever did, and I did it before I was really new as much as I know now. I'd love to be able to go back and do it. A man named Herman Arnspiger, who's not mentioned much, but he was one of the three people in the Wills Fiddle Band back in the late 1920s that walked into the radio station in Fort Worth with Bob carrying his fiddle in a feed sack, and they sat down and played Who Broke the Lock on the Hen House Door. It was Milton Brown, the vocalist, who was a cigar salesman, Bob Wills, the fiddler, and Herman Arnspiger, the rhythm guitarist. And I actually got to interview Herman Arnspiger a few months before his death.
Talk about some of the things you learned talking to those people over the years about, you know, how the Wills Band operated, because it was, you know, it was an interesting amalgam. I mean, it was always in an amorphous state where people were coming and going, which a lot of bands are like that. But when you think of the bands of that era, there was this more recognizable personnel, and you have people switching in and out, and you had different instrumentations.
Some people stayed here with Johnny Lee. Bob being the patriarch of the bunch, when he was out on the West Coast, he would call for people. He'd call Johnny Lee and say, hey, I'd like to have so-and-so come out. But if they really wanted to stay here and didn't want to travel away from Tulsa, they could stay. Clarence Cagle, the piano player, the Boogie Woogie Highball is his signature song, was a good example. So was Curly Lewis, although Curly did also play with Bob. But they wanted to stay here. They didn't want to go out on the road. But otherwise, they would just be shifting people around all the time. And as you say, they sort of had a repertoires that were very similar. But I learned a lot of things, but I think one of the things that it took me a long time to learn was, and this seems simple, Rich, but that Western swing music is not country music. The closest music to Western swing is Dixieland jazz. That is its closest, that's its closest cousin, is Dixieland Jazz. I also remember people telling me that Bob would, if he had a chance of hiring a great musician who was just an okay guy, or an okay musician who was a great guy, he always hired the great guy. Eldon Shamblin told me that they didn't matter how they felt, whatever, they would sit on the bandstand, they always had to smile. They always had to mix it up with the people. They never could be sour on the bandstand. And it was just, you get a picture of a person who was, and of course, you know, Thomas Connor and I wrote a play in which Bob Wills meets Woody Guthrie, and the difference in these two wonderful Oklahoma musicians and the difference in how they wanted to help their people. Bob wanted to help people escape, and Woody wanted to change things through polemic. And Bob was not a politician. In fact, he turned down, people wanted him to run for Senate, and he turned him down. He would not run for the Senate. But Johnny, also you learn about the different personalities of the brothers. Bob was the patriarch. Johnny Lee, as I think it was Glenn Reese, the saxophone player, Blub Reese, told me, he says, Johnny Lee Wills and the boys. And he was one of the boys.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't Bob. Bob, Glenn told me, when he walked out on that bandstand, you could just have an average band. And when Bob Wills walked out on the bandstand, it turned into something completely different. He was like the Elvis of his time.
Really?
And Johnny Lee was not. Johnny Lee was one of the guys and was a more unassuming guy. And but yet he was, in his own way, he was just as influential a figure as Bob.
You know, it's interesting. We're having the Tulsa Playboys back, and one of the things I think is really interesting is, you know, I think probably 10 years ago, we were really worried about the fact that this music was going to die out.
Yes.
Yeah. Because all the, you know, for so long, the Eldon Shamblins, the Clarence Cagles, the Leon McAuliffes, and, you know, who sort of made Tulsa home for the most part, were the people who kept this music going.
That's right.
And now, all of a sudden, with the Tulsa Playboys, you have a whole another generation of musicians that have been soaking this up, and oftentimes were in the bands backing up a lot of these guys.
That's exactly right.
And now they're stepping up to the front, which
now
is
now they're middle-aged guys that are stepping up, like us, that are stepping up to the front. And then there's some young guys coming up. You know, in this town, there's a band called the A-Bar Bunkhouse Band, and some of those guys were taught by Shelby Eicher, who fronts the Tulsa Playboys. And, you know, Western swing is like a lot of other musical forms. It sometimes goes into a little bit of an eclipse and then comes back. You know, after about 58 or 59, rock and roll just sent it packing. You know, you could see that at the Kane's Ballroom when rock and roll eclipsed Western swing, and Johnny Lee and Bob had to go elsewhere.
I think they went out to the Caravan the only place you could hear Western swing when I was coming of age.
Well, they went to, in 58, 59, they went to Vegas. Yeah. They had an older crowd, yeah. You know, and they still, Benny Ketchum had a band, had Johnny Cale, J.J. Cale in his band, and he could play Western swing and rock and roll. But rock and roll, see, kids always want their own music. And it didn't matter. Bob Wills is interviewed during that time period in the 50s saying, well, if these kids can't dance to our music, they can't dance to anything. That wasn't the point. They didn't want their music. It was their parents' music. Yeah. They wanted their own. So Bob and Johnny Lee split, and rock and roll comes along. But then in 1970, Merle Haggard does his tribute to Bob Wills, and he's just coming off of he's in the middle of a huge successful career, and the hippie boys start coming in. Those hippie boys like Commander Cody, Asleep at the Wheel, and they start playing Western swing, and all of a sudden the new generation discovers it, and it's going to continue that way.
Yeah. We're hoping a lot of people come out to swing on this. You can get information at the Kane's box office or at our website at Public Radio Tulsa. John, thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you. And may I say thanks also to John T. Wills and the Wills family for allowing us to do this event in conjunction with their father and his legacy.
Yeah, 100 years of Johnny Lee Wills.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
You betcha.
John Woolley is the host of Swing on This, heard every Saturday at 7 here on Public Radio 89.5. And this Saturday, it will be Swing on This Live, taking place at the Kane's Ballroom. The doors open at 6. The show begins at 7 o'clock with the Tulsa Playboys, Cowbop, and singer-songwriter Don White. For more information, visit our website at publicradiotulsa.org. And, of course, proceeds do benefit the station. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Dr. John Henning Schumann.
I always thought being a doctor meant that I'd be free from cubicle life. Not so. Our medical center spent more than $60 million over the last 6 years to upgrade the computer system we use. It's a system we use for just about everything. With it, we can admit and discharge patients, write orders for the tests and medications they need while they're in the hospital, and even do most of the documentation and charting for their stay. Interestingly, though nurses, therapists, and virtually everyone else uses the computer for charting, we doctors still handwrite our progress notes and put them in a paper chart. I'm no Luddite, and generally I've been happy with the transformation of our systems. The upgrade is in line with the federal government's push to digitize all things medical to improve efficiency, safety, and ideally lower healthcare costs. Medicine is finally moving, like most other industries before it, into the 21st century. Be careful what you wish for. Mandates bring all sorts of unintended consequences. First, we're now tethered to computer appliances. To perform any basic hospital function, an order needs to be sent via the computer system. This is good in that all doctors' orders go through one standardized entry point, and doing so eliminates issues with horrible physician penmanship. This is bad because the computer can hamper communication amongst the care team. For example, before our reliance on the computer, we would usually talk to our nurses about our care plan, or any updates or changes in the orders regarding a patient. In this way, we knew that the nurses understood what we were doing and why we were doing it. Now we enter our plans in the computer, and the nurses receive them through the computer, but the communication piece is missing. Sure, we can and sometimes do still talk. Nurses are empowered to call us when there's a lack of clarity, but something elemental has been lost. Being tethered to computers has other downsides. There's a much higher demand on the hardware side of things. If the doctors need computers to enter orders, and the nurses and other staff need computers to read the orders, you can see how this can create a bottleneck. The medical center has to invest in hardware, maintain it, and upgrade it constantly. In one of the more ironic twists, to combat the hardware bottleneck around the various desktops on the wards or outside of patients' rooms, hospitals have invested heavily in computers on wheels, or COWs. These portable workstations can be pushed along to patients' rooms, where the doctors can look at data, enter orders, etc., and or nurses can enter data, read orders, reconcile medications, etc. Many hospitals still call their units COWs. My medical center correctly realized that patients might overhear this term and think, are they calling me a cow? We've therefore changed the name of our cows to R2 units, a tribute to the little sidekick robot from the Star Wars series. Sounds futuristic, sexy, cool. Hey R2, come here and figure out what's wrong with this patient. R2, save them! Wishful thinking, right? But not too far off, perhaps, as computer simulations of patients for training purposes become more the norm at teaching hospitals. One morning not too long ago, I walked down one of the hospital wards. I saw half a dozen nurses sitting in the hallway at their R2 units, entering data and talking about their social lives and their schedules. Where before they might have saved such chatter for the nurses' station, they were now out in full force on the ward, doing work at their cubicles and carrying on as if no one were listening. A major downside of having computers everywhere is that there's simply less contact with our patients. Our tendency is to look at the computer for data before even embarking to the bedside to talk with or evaluate the patient. And by this I mean doctors and nurses. I don't have data to prove this, but anecdotally, I know that our increasing emphasis on informatics has made us more data-centric and less patient-centered. Remember the old term pencil pusher, and how in a world that valued accomplishing things with smarts and brawn, a pencil pusher was seen as a non-contributor? I fear we're becoming a profession of keyboard crazies.
Dr. John Henning Schumann is a writer, internist, and medical educator at the University of Oklahoma School of Community Medicine here in Tulsa, and the author of the blog Glass Hospital. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.